We're holding on Bays on the Bays. Rav Yosef on the two lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday, so far, two understandings of why the Mishnah is saying that Betilol, why in the Mishnah Betilol is saying that you're not allowed to eat an egg that was laid on Yantav. One was, we said, was Rav Nachman's reason that it's because of Mukta, that we're talking about a chicken that's meant that you meant for laying eggs, so you didn't intend to eat the chicken, and the egg comes from the chicken. The whole thing was mukta. In the say it's noilad, actually the chicken itself is mukta and the egg is noilad. Then we had Rabba's reason, hachana de Rabba, the idea that food that you're going to be eating on Shabbos or on Yom Tov has to have been prepared from beforehand, and here the egg wasn't prepared from beforehand because it hadn't been laid yet. Now we have more reasons. Rav Yosef Amar, Gzeira Mishum Peres HaNoshun. Rav Yosef says it's Gzeira because the egg is similar to fruit that falls off the tree on Shabbos. Now, Minat Torah, of course, you know, all the pit fruit on Shabbos.
On the tree, but if they're detached.
So, one second. So, if they fell off by themselves on Shabbos, Minat Torah, you'd be allowed to eat them.
Right.
Midrabanan, you're not. This, the egg that comes out of chicken, in that sense, is like a fruit that fell off the tree. Right. Question is, though, we're going to ask, time am I? So what are you telling me? Why are you not allowed to eat fruit that fell off the tree on Shabbos? Gzeira shemi yalavi yitlosh. Because it's a gzeira, because you might climb up the tree and make it and pick it. Well, no. You're not allowed to eat it, even if it fell off by itself, because you might forget. You might not wait for it to fall onto the ground. You might actually go and pick it. So that would be the reason why to say it's also when it fell on the ground.
Seeing the fruit on the ground, that's on the tree?
No, something like. I mean, if you're allowed to eat this apple which was on the tree and now is not, then you might forget yourself and you might think, well, you know, what's the difference whether I pick it or whether it falls off itself? The problem is, he goofed Gzera, but that itself is Gzera. Do we make Gzera Gzera? So Rashi had mentioned yesterday, and it's a commonplace thing throughout the Gemara, that you never do. The Chachamim make Gzera to safeguard that you don't do something Darai. So they don't make Gzera to protect another Gzera. So then, what are you telling me? There's a Gzera, you're not allowed. So there's a Gzera not to eat fruit that fell off, and in order to safeguard that Gzera, we're making a Gzera that you're not allowed to eat the egg, because it's similar to that. That's a Gzera Gzera. The answer is kula chod gzeirah. It's all one gzeirah. In other words, Rabbi Yosef is saying the gzeirah was you're not allowed to eat something that grew someplace and was detached from there on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So that includes fruit and it also includes eggs. So it's all
that grew and that came off. Was produced really on Yom Tov.
Yes. And now, there is a difference because, I mean, there is a difference. Fruit has to actually be picked from the tree. The egg just gets laid by the chicken without any picking having to be done. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yosef says it's all considered one gzeira. It's all one basic concept.
Tree is considered like nolad in a way?
No. We're not saying nolad. We're saying that the fruit that fell from the tree is also because he might pick it. That gzeira also includes even things where picking is not relevant, such as eggs. You can't speak of you might come to pick the egg, but nevertheless, when the Chachamim made this zera against fruit, they made a blanket statement that it includes anything that's detached from where it grew before. Tosfos has a long discussion on a couple of points of that about this. First of all, why indeed don't we say that the fruit would be mukta? Why isn't it also on the grounds of mukta alone? Why do you have to say? Because you might pick it from the tree. So Tosfos finds possibilities. First of all, we could be talking according to Reb Shimon again, who doesn't hold of mukta. Second of all, we could be talking about a case where you meant for the fruit to be eaten by your pet birds, for example. So once it's available to them, then it's available to you also. As far as mukta is concerned. So then it wouldn't be an issue of mukta, but there'd still be an issue that you might pick it off the tree. And then Tosfos has another long discussion about, also Tosfos discusses that mukta only applies in cases where there's not a lot of effort involved in getting to the thing that you might forget, therefore, and use it. But here, where it takes effort to pick it off and to climb up the tree and pick, then maybe not, yeah. That's one of the possibilities Tosfos mentions. Then one other thing that Tosfos discusses is something we touched on briefly yesterday. Why anyway? So Shabbos, fine, we can understand. You're obviously not allowed to pick fruit from trees. Why on Yom Tov would it be an issue? You're allowed to do malachas eichel nefesh. Isn't picking the fruit off the tree a malacha that involves food? So why would it be also? So many different Rishonim deal with this issue. We touched on this yesterday. What categories of malachas are also on Yom Tov, and which categories are mutter, and are ones that are also, which ones are they, Deraisa or Derabanan? For example, one way of looking at it is anything we mentioned yesterday, Rashi holds, anything that could have been done yesterday, and there wouldn't be a change in the thing, it wouldn't spoil or anything, then it's also, because you might as well have done it yesterday. Other Mepharshim say there's a difference that, for example, picking
perishable according to Rashi would be
not necessarily picking fruit, but other kinds of things. We mentioned yesterday, for example, about grinding salt.
Some of our new technological advances, then some things that would have been
perishable and now is not. It's not even so much a matter of perishable necessarily. For example, spices aren't really perishable, but if you grind them one day, then they lose their flavor a little bit by the next day. So yeah, I guess
it's a form of being perishable.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But yeah, okay. And there's, you know, other Rishonim explain differently. Other Rishonim, I think the Rosh, talks about the idea that there's a distinction between malachas that usually you do, like, you know, a small bit at a time for yourself to eat, versus malachas that are done a lot of times on a large scale. What's picking fruit is a tolda or a different form of the malacha of harvesting. Harvesting is something usually, you know, you have hundreds of workers working in a field, you know, harvesting. So therefore, that kind of thing is also on Yom Tov. We don't put that under the category of malachas eichel nefesh. The kind of malachas that you're allowed to do as malachas eichel nefesh are things like, for example, baking and things that you do that you usually do small scale in your own house, not things that you do like on an industrial scale normally.
But the food has to be ready prepared.
Right. Another way of looking at it is similarly, there's one of the Mepharshim points out, the expression the Torah always uses by Malachas of Yom Tov is called Malachas Avoida Loisasu, which is partly why we know that you're allowed to do Malachas Eichel Nefesh, besides the fact that there's a pasuk in Parshas Bo that says so. But some of the Mepharshim explain, don't remember which ones, that the word Malachas, the Avoida in Malachas Avoida is also similar to the word for Evan. So therefore, Malachas Avoida is defined as anything that normally you would delegate to an Evan. Harvesting, for example, you'd normally delegate to an Eved. You know, the owner of the field himself doesn't go out and harvest it. Mashenkin, you know, the housewife herself cooks and bakes, you know, or you yourself around the house, you know, you do other things in the process of preparing food. Tosfos themselves has yet another explanation of all of this based on the Yerushalmi that Because what's the basic idea that we say that you're allowed to do malachas eichel nefesh on Yom Tov is because the pasuk says so in Parshas Bo, achar she'achal l'chol nefesh. We learned it this past Shabbos for Parshas Chodesh. So the next pasuk after that says ushmartem et ha-matzis. Now, what point technically does matzah need to be watched from? So, you know, the better thing to do matzah shmura is it has to be guarded from when it's harvested, mishas tzira. Theoretically, it only has to be done b'shas lisha, from when it's needed. So therefore, we learn from that tekish of the Pesukim that only from kneading and on, when you think of the malachas of Shabbos, you think of the 11 malachas that have to do with making bread, starting with plowing, and planting, and harvesting, and so forth, and ending with baking, only the ones from kneading and on are considered malachas eichel nefesh.
Because that's what's mentioned.
We learn from that hekish in the Pesukim.
And only that.
That was only those, for example, but not the ones before that. Be that as it may, so it is also to pick fruit on Yom Tov, and so we're saying, according to Rabbi Yosef, that the din that you're not allowed to eat fruit that fell off the tree because you might forget and pick it, the same rule also encompasses eggs, even though by them the idea that you might pick it is not really shayach.
Picking really means take it off the tree.
Yeah.
Collect it.
Yeah. Rabbi Yitzchak says yet another reason why the egg would be also in our Mishnah. Gzeira mishum mashkin shazavu. It's a gzeira because of juice that oozes out of fruit. The Mishnah describes, we learned in Shabbos, that if you have fruit, that you have a pile of fruit that preposterous was meant, for example, grapes and olives, that preposterous are meant for squeezing to make grape juice or olive oil, and some of the juice flowed out on its own on Shabbos, then you're not allowed to drink that juice. Again, midrabanan, because you might come to actually squeeze it yourself. We learned about that over there in the Gemara, that if you already started the process of squeezing it before Shabbos and then more of it flows out on Shabbos, you are allowed to, but that's a different thing. So here, again, so there you have the idea. What would be the problem with squeezing fruit is gush. The malacha of you had the juice was inside the fruit, and now you're squeezing it out of where it came, out of its natural container. So by the same token over here, an egg being weighed is a food that's coming out of its natural container inside the chicken. No, but you also don't pick fruit. But the same kind of thing as Rabbi Yosef is saying, that the gzera about fruit also includes eggs. So Rabbi Yitzchok is saying the same thing, that you can't eat the egg because of the gzera that you can't drink the juice that oozed out of the fruit.
How does it make connection?
That's how he makes the connection. We're going to see soon in the Gemara. Rabbi Yitzchok makes that connection also. That the juice out of fruit is something coming out of its original natural container. The egg is also coming out of its original natural container. So again, the Gemara asks, Amalei Abaya, Mashkin Tzavu, Taima Mai Mishum Gzeira, Taima Mai, Gzeira Shami Yitzchot. What? What's the reason why you're not allowed to drink the juice? Because you might actually go and squeeze the fruit, which would be a malacha of dosh. Again, he go for Gzeira, Vanan Nekum, Renik Gzeira, Gzeira. That original thing is Gzeira. How can he make a Gzeira to safeguard Gzeira? And again, the answer is Kolachad Gzeira. He is all one Gzeira. Rabbi Yitzchok is saying again, when the Chachamim made a rule, you're not allowed to drink juice that oozed out of fruit. They included in that zera anything where you have one kind of food coming out of another kind of food, or coming out of it like one kind of food coming out of another container, basically. So like the egg coming out of the chicken. So far now we have four reasons, four different explanations from different Amiroyim of the reason why Basil asks the egg in our Mishnah. So now we got to consider, why does each one hold differently than the other? Kula could have Nachman Le'amri. None of the other Amiroyim want to say like Rav Nachman, who said that it's an issue that's an issue of Muktzah or Noilad, because Kikushan, because we had our question that we said yesterday, that if indeed Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are both arguing on Muktzah and on Noilad, then the Mishnah should have mentioned both cases. It should have mentioned together the chicken and the egg. Also, Beit Shammai and Ta'achol, Beit Hillel and Lo'Ta'achol. The fact that not implies that it's not a machlokus about an issue, muktzah or noilad. The Mishnah itself should have mentioned both, we said yesterday. Because even though we said the Mishnah wanted to mention the case of the egg to show us how far Beit Shammai is going in being makel, but we also want to know how far Beit Hillel is going in being machmer, that not only they hold noilad as also, but even muktzah is also. So, and it would have only taken one more word to say that. So therefore, the Mishnah should have done that. Yes. Because of that, the other Amiroyim don't like Rav Nachman's explanation. And they also don't all agree with Rabba, because Achana Leslahu, they don't agree with this concept of Achana. They don't agree that Midoraita, we said yesterday that Rabba holds, and Rabba has his Achana de Rabba, his explanation of the pasuk that Midoraita, food that you're going to eat on one day, on a holy day, on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, has to have been, according to Rashi, designated, according to Tosfos, prepared the day before. And he says that that's Doraita. The other Chachamim don't agree with that. They say that's Rabbanan. And in that case, then you're not going to make a gzera gzera. Ella, Rabbi Yosef, my time alay on with Rabbi Yitzchak. But why Rabbi Yosef, and why does Rabbi Yosef not hold like Rabbi Yitzchak, who's learning it from the juice? Why is he saying that instead he wants to compare it to fruit from the tree? Amalach, because Rabbi Yosef will tell you, beitza oichlo peiretz oichlo. Let's consider. An egg is food, and fruit is food. La pokimashkin, la oichlo, as opposed to juice from that oozes out of fruit. It's not a food, it's a drink. It has a different status in halacha. So therefore, there's more of a logical reason to say that if the egg is also because that the Chachamim included it in one of their other gzeiras, it's more logical to assume that is the gzeira on food, which means fruit, and not juices. Yeah. Why doesn't Rabbi Yitzchok agree with Rabbi Yosef? Because Amalach, he can tell you, beitza blua or mashkin blua. The difference is, the egg, in a way, is more like juice. The egg is balua, it's hidden inside the chicken until it's laid, and the juice is hidden inside the fruit. La puk, and therefore, both of them coming out of the container is more similar to each other. It's both a thing related to dosh. La puki peres, the middle of a kaimo, as opposed to fruit growing on a tree, where it's just it's open there on the tree. All you have to do is pick it off. So he says it's more logical that if they were saying the chamer after in the egg as part of another gzera, it's more logical that they're including it in another gzera of something where item A is hidden inside item B. and not then not fruit on the tree where both of them are open. And the Gemara points out, Rabbi Yochanan also holds that, like Rabbi Yitzchak, that the reason why the egg is osur is because of a gzera against about drinking juice that oozed out of the fruit. Because we find that Rabbi Yochanan pointed out a stira between two statements of Rabbi Yehuda in two different Mishnayos, and then he explained it. Namely, Tanan, one Mishnah says in Shabbos, "In certain as a peris lahutim hen mashkin, you're not allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos to extract juice from it." V'im yotzer ma'atzman asura, and if the juice came out by itself on Shabbos, like we said, it's also. The Gemara actually goes into some detail over there. There's a difference between fruits like grapes and olives, which almost always are squeezed, versus fruits like berries, it says over there, berries and pomegranates, which sometimes people squeeze them for juice, sometimes not, versus other fruits that almost never are squeezed. There's a difference in that regard, but here that's not okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imla Oichlin. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. Why do you have this fruit piled together? If you meant it for eating, so for example, yes, it's a bunch of grapes, but these weren't grapes that you were planning to press and make into wine. These were grapes that you were intending to eat as table grapes.
So he says you make it lose it, but having sense.
Then hayoyts mehen mutter. Then whatever comes out of them is mutter, because he's not worried about. What's the whole point? We're saying that the point is that he's saying. I mean, there's no reason to make a gzera on them because you intended them to eat. You weren't intending to squeeze them. There's no concern that you might squeeze them because you weren't intending to anyway. Yeah. Well, so yeah, we said yesterday that, for example, yeah, you slice up a fruit. Let's say, yeah, there's no question you're allowed to eat it. Right. Right. So that's the idea we have over here, is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying juice that comes out of these fruits is orichol de'efras. It's food that got cut up into pieces, like, because you did not intend to have juice from it in the first place. You intended to eat the fruit, so the fruit itself was available to eat. And therefore, the juice is also fine. The im lamashkin ayotzim hen osur. Only if you had them piled up in order to juice them, to squeeze them, then whatever comes out of them is osur. Yeah. Now the halacha is not like that. The halacha is like the chachamim. Yeah. So alma kol oichlin Rabbi Yehuda oichlin de efrasu. So therefore, it means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, any case of food. Of food that gets separated into two components, it's considered oichol de'efras. It's considered the food that got separated, like an apple that got cut up. Because that's what he's saying. In other words, that you meant these grapes for food, and therefore whatever comes out of them is also considered food in that sense, and you're allowed to drink it.
That's only for the fruits that have juice. I mean, can't it has juice?
No, we're talking about, for example, grapes and olives.
Right.
So according to the Tanakhama, if you had a pile of grapes, even if you were intending to eat them, and juice flowed out of them, you're not allowed to drink that juice on Shabbos. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says you are allowed to. That was one Mishnah, Uraminu, but then we have a contradiction to that for another Mishnah, in Ar Masechta, or it's not in Ar Masechta, actually, it's in Eruvin. The Mishnah is talking over there about Rosh Hashanah. Even in the times of the Mishnah, we know, we'll discuss it extensively on Daf Hei, Daf Vav, that even in those times, many times, Rosh Hashanah was 2 days. And Rosh Hashanah is different than all other two-day Yom Tovim. Again, we're going to get into it over the next couple of days, that all the other two-day Yom Tovim is a matter of Sfeika D'Yoma. So therefore, you know, in principle, either one or the other is Yom Tov, but not both. That has implications, for example, as far as making an Erech Tavshilin al-Tanai, as far as making an Erech Tchumen al-Tanai. Then the Mishnah discusses there in Erevin about the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are different. They're considered one long Kedusha, because the reason why we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is completely different than the reason why we have 2 days of other Yom Tovim. Being because with Rosh Hashanah itself being on Rosh Chodesh, I mean, we'll talk about it more in the next couple of days, but briefly the idea is whenever the end of Elul came and Rosh Hashanah is starting, the Sanhedrin always has to expect that Edom are going to come. The 30th day, and therefore, because of that, people would keep ready the night before, and that day they'd start keeping as Yom Tov. Now, normally, Edom would come first. Now, normally, one of two things would happen: either Edom come first thing in the morning, and then that's it. You have that day as Rosh Hashanah, and the next day is a weekday. The next day, Beis Tishrei is a weekday. Or no Edom show up, and then the next day, and then it turns out in the end that day was not Yom Tov, and the next day is Yom Tov. But you have a case, the Mishnah describes it in Rosh Hashanah, that one time there was a situation, they were expecting Edom to come. No Edom had come already until by the time it was time to bring the Talmud Chobein Abayim. They didn't know what to do as far as they had a problem with the Korban Musaf and with the Shira. We'll get into it in the next couple of days. So therefore, from then on, the Chachamim made a takana that if the Edom come any later than that, we don't accept them. But after all, they came. So therefore, we still consider the rest of that day to be Rosh Hashanah. And the next day also has to be Rosh Hashanah, because the fact is, we're not accepting their Edos and being Mekadosh L'Chodesh until the next day. So already, even in the times when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, it could happen sometimes they have to have 2 days Rosh Hashanah.
It didn't always happen,
but it could happen.
If they didn't accept them, but that was considered the first Rosh Hashanah.
Yes. So because of that, and then what happened after the Chorban, again, we're going to get into it on Daf Daled Daf Hey, but because of that, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is not a matter of Sfeika D'Yoma. We consider it one long Kedusha. For many purposes, we consider it one day. That's the famous thing why we have to have a new fruit the second night of Rosh Hashanah, because there's a suffix whether we should be saying Shachianu.
So it is.
No. There's a suffix whether we should be saying Shachianu. On the contrary, with other Yomim Tovim, there's no question. With other Yomim Tovim, there's no question that you, for example, Sukkot, we say Shachianu both nights, like we said the other day at the end of Sukkot. Why? Because Manavshach. Either today is Yom Tov or tomorrow is Yom Tov. It can't be both Midaraisa. Because Midaraisa, so therefore you should say Shachianu on both of them, one way or the other, in order to that the Yom Tov is covered. Rosh Hashanah, if we consider, it's not considered two separate days, it's considered one long day, Yom Ha'aruchta. So then the question becomes, the second night Rosh Hashanah, when you sit down to your meal, or when you're making Kiddush actually, should you be saying Shachianu? The same way as you don't say Shachianu during the daytime Kiddush,
right.
It's all part of one day.
It's considered one day. Why is it considered
That's what I'm saying, it's considered one day because, months. It's considered one day because the whole concept why we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah is because there were times when you actually, La'alacha had to have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Because, again, you were expecting Edom to come. They didn't show up until very late in the day. The Beis Din does not listen to them, but nevertheless, they came. The Levana was seen the night before. So today should have been Rosh Hashanah, and tomorrow has to be Rosh Hashanah, because that's when Beis Din is the Kaddish
HaKadosh. Beis Din is always the Kaddish HaKadosh if they didn't come late or don't come the next day.
The next day, right, because a month can never be longer than 30 days.
So when Mashiach comes, then we could have a one-day
Rosh Hashanah?
Even
in those times, I mean, the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah that actually historically, from the time of Ezra until the time of the Amoraim, they never actually had a case where they had to make Elul 30 days long, Lo'imatsinu Elul Ma'ubo. Which means, therefore, that at least in Yerushalayim or wherever the Sanhedrin was located at the time, they only had to have 1 day Rosh Hashanah. And actually, there's an interesting thing. If you look at the piyutim that we say in Musaf of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, many of them were written by Rabbi Elazar HaKaler. Who Rabbi Elazar HaKaler was, there's a lot of discussion. Tosfos and Chagiga talks about that he might be Rabbi Elazar ben Arach or Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. I think one of the other. Tosfos says that it's Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. The Rashba, I think, says that it's Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. There's different historians who argue different possibilities that he lived in the times of the Gemara or after the times of the Gemara, whatever it is, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. So many of the piyutim that we say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur come from him. If you look in Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, the first day we have a lot of piyutim. The second day there's next to nothing. We run in the Chazan and Semi side. You go straight to all we have is the Kail Erech Din and then Rosh Hashanah and then you're into the thick of things with Musaf. Why is that? So it's because Rabbi Elazar HaKaler lived in Eretz Yisrael. Whether he was a Tanner or whether he was an Amora, whatever the case, in his time, many times, there was only 1 day Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, he only wrote Piyotim for the 1 day.
Amazing how he can determine a lot of things.
Anyway, so the Mishnah is talking over there about...
Rosh Hashanah is one day.
So, in that Mishnah in Eruvin, it starts talking about the case, again, we had 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, where the question is, are you allowed to, for example, make an Eruv Tchumen in one direction for the 1 day and the other direction for the other day? So the Chachamim there say, no, it's all Yom HaRichter, it's one long Kedusha, so therefore you can't, the same way, you can't make an Eruv Tchumen for half of Shabbos in this direction and the other half of Shabbos in that direction. But Rabbi Yehuda says you can. Rabbi Yehuda says a two-day Rosh Hashanah is like every other two-day Yom Tov. And va'oid, this is where it comes in. Va'oid, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, and furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda says, Masna Adam al Kokolo shall pay this for Yom Tov. A person can make a condition about a basket of fruit on the first day of Yom Tov, va'oichel b'sheni, and then he can eat it on the second day. What are we talking about over here? Similar idea, where it's similar idea as far as the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. You have a basket of fruit, that or you have two baskets of fruit, actually, that you forgot to take Truma and Maisa from. You're not allowed to take Truma and Maisa on Yom Tov. We'll learn that in the fifth parak. So you have a problem. Rabbi Yehuda says, so on any other 2 day Yom Tov, the Chachamim agree you can do this. Again, there's a Macholikus, Rabbi Yehuda and Macham, whether you can do this on the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Yehuda is saying like this: given that Rosh Hashanah is the same idea as the other 2 day Yom Tov, either today or tomorrow is Yom Tov, but not both. What you do is like this: you put the two baskets in front of you, and you say like this: I'm designating some part of this basket. And then you mark the part or whatever as Truma and Maestris on behalf of both baskets. If today is Chol, if today is Yom Tov, then I can't take Truma and Maestris, so not. The next day you come back and you say the same declaration again. If yesterday was Chol, then I don't need to do anything now. If yesterday was Kodesh, then I'm designating the same part of the fruit as Truma and Maestris for both baskets. And then you can eat them.
It's not a definite one, but
right.
It's going to come into effect later.
Yeah. And so you're allowed to do that. So then you're allowed to eat it on the second day. V'chein beitz shnil the tradition to achol b'sheni. And similarly, Rabbi Yehuda says an egg that was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to eat on the second day. Well, that's so b'sheni ain tradition lay, which implies you can only eat it on the second day, not the first day. Why? Because again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the same logic. The 2 days of Yom, if it's laid on the first day, you can't eat it that day because maybe that day really is Yom Tov. And that's the beitz shnil the Yom Tov. Obviously, he holds like this hillel. Because that's the halacha. But on the second day already, you can say, if yesterday was chol, then I'm allowed to eat it today. And if yesterday was kodesh, fine, today's chol, and I'm also allowed to eat it.
And since you know for sure it came out on that the first day, then that's why you couldn't do it with the eating it on the first day.
You can't eat on the first day, right, because the first day may be the real yom tov, right. But the second day, either way, you're covered. But so on the first day, though, you're not. So the point is, Rabbi Yochanan pointed out the stira. On the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you're allowed to eat juice that oozes out of fruits on Shabbos, if you meant the fruit to eat b'chatchila, because it's oichel de'efras. On the other hand, he's saying that you're not allowed to eat an egg that was laid on the first day of Yom Tov, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. So Rabbi Yochanan pointed out a stira, u'mishani, Rabbi Yochanan, and then he answered, mukhlafet hashita. You actually have to flip around the opinions. In the Mishnah, talking about the squeezing of fruits, about the juice that oozed out of the fruits, Rabbi Yochanan says you have to flip around. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says it's also no matter what, and the Chachamim are the ones who are saying it's mutter, if it was meant for food. So therefore, it's consistent. Therefore, the same Rabbi Yehuda who's saying that you're not allowed to eat the juice because you're not allowed to eat the juice is the same one who says that you're not allowed to eat the egg. Now, if you flip it around. Tosfos talks about why don't we say the other way around, why don't we say that you flip around the Mishnah about the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, anyway. Now, since Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out a contradiction between these two Mishnayos, Shema Mina Chad Taimahu, then that means that Rabbi Yochanan holds that it's all one reason. Otherwise, for example, if Rabbi Yochanan did not hold like Rabbi Yitzchak, if he held, for example, like Nachman or Rabbo or Rabbi Yosef, that the reason why the egg is also is for different reasons, nothing to do with juice, then there's no stira. Only if we say, so we have to say that he holds like Rabbi Yitzchak. Ravina Omar, Ravina says, La'olam lo tepuch, you don't have to flip around either Mishnah actually, because Rabbi Yehuda the divreim did Rabbanan kamalahu, because Rabbi Yochanan in the Mishnah about the egg is saying according to you Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda, in the one about the egg, where he says you're allowed to eat it on the second day, but by implication, you're not allowed to eat it on the first day, he's not saying his own opinion. He's arguing according to you Chachamim. He's going like this. As far as I'm concerned, you'd be allowed to eat the egg even on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, because it's food, the cut separated. But at least according to you, fine, you don't agree with Eichel de Efras. Fine. But at least you should agree with me that on the second day it should be Mutter, the Shnei Kedushin, because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are considered two different things of Kedusha. And the Rabbanan tell him, no, we disagree with you on both grounds. We disagree with you on the second day because it's an extension of the first day, and we disagree with you on the first day because we don't hold the Eichel de Efras business.
Well, the first one,
They don't agree with him. Well, they don't agree with him on the first day because they're saying the same way as we say that the juice that came out of the fruits is also. Because we don't hold this also to Ephras thing. We say that anything that came out of its natural container on Shabbos, on Shabbos or on Yom Tov is also. So by the same token, the egg is also on the first day. And then on the second day, we say that the second day is considered an extension of the first day. He has his own. It's fine. So therefore, you don't have to flip around either. You can still say that Rabbi Yehuda agrees. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the juice is mutter, and Rabbi Yehuda also says that the egg actually would be mutter on the first day as well. He's only when he's saying it's also on the first day. He's saying I can understand why you Chachamim say it's also on the first day. I don't understand why you're saying it's also on the second day. And they tell him because we also disagree with you on this kedusha achas or shtei kedushas business.
Yeah.
It's just considered one long day as opposed to two separate days. Yeah. Another way of looking at this, at the Mishnah about the egg, when Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the egg is also on the first day, Ravina Breder of Olama, Hocha B'Tanagolos HaMedes L'Gadol Beitzim. That Mishnah in Eruvin is talking about a chicken that was meant for laying eggs, which, you know, we started yesterday, the Gemara had started by asking that if that's the case in our Mishnah, right, the two kinds of chicken, that if it's meant for laying eggs, then why does Vitzil say it's also? But here we have Rabbi Yehuda. The time made Yisrael Mukta. Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his own opinion, where he always holds of Mukta. He always holds of the generic category of Mukta, and therefore the egg is Mukta in that sense because you didn't have it in mind before Yom Tov. Same reason why Rabbi Nachman said that the egg is also according to Bishilul. He says Meisvi. I have a contradiction to all of these opinions. Or most of these opinions, actually. So far we have a whole bunch of different ways of explaining why the egg should be also on Yom Tov. But now we have a braisa that says echad beitza shenol de b'Shabbos ve'echad beitza shenol de b'Yom Tov. Whether an egg was laid on Shabbos or whether it was laid on Yom Tov, ein metalt lenoi. So you're not allowed to carry it because mukta. Lo lachasis ba'ezakli. You're not allowed to use it to cover a utensil. Like you could use it to cover like a bottle, for example. You could use it as a makeshift bottle cap.
Is it beitza?
Yeah. So you can't eat it. You can't eat it. That's a given. You can't eat it, but we're saying you're not even, it's mukta in the sense you're not even allowed to use it for something else. So you're not allowed to use it, for example, to cover a bottle. You're also not allowed to move it in order to hold up the leg of a bed. Now, how would you use an egg to hold up the leg of a bed? Rashi says, yes, if you stand an egg on its end, then yes, you can use it to support something. An eggshell has quite a bit of strength to it. There's a reason why the hen is able to sit on it without cracking it. You know.
Bed is not only its own
weight. Yeah. So okay, we might be talking about a life bed, you know, but right. We're not necessarily talking about a bed for a 400-pound person, you know. But you're allowed to put a plate over it to prevent it from so it doesn't get broken, which Rashi points out, and Tosfos also talks about it, that actually the Gemara in Shabbos says it's not so simple. There's actually a machlokas amiroyim. We know it's a given the egg is mukta, we're saying. But it's a machlokas amiroyim. Are you allowed to move a keli which is not mukta for the sake of something that is mukta? So in this case over here, the egg is mukta. You want to take a plate and use it to cover the egg. The plate is not mukta, but the egg is. There's no question you're allowed to pick up the plate in order to eat with it. But are you allowed to pick up the plate in order to put it over an egg which itself is mukta? It's a machlokes amiroyim. So according to the opinion that it's allowed, then fine, you can understand this braisa very straightforwardly. According to the other opinion, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, who says that you can't, you would have to say that when are we talking about is, for example, you're already holding the plate, or that you needed to pick up the plate for some other reason. You needed to pick it up, for example, because it's in the way. You're trying to set the table, so you needed to move the plate. Once you have it in your hand, you can put it over the egg. And Tosfos points out, this is a general rule, that if in cases where you're allowed to pick up something mukta for whatever reason, and we know there's many such cases, once you have it in your hand, you don't have to put it down right away. You can carry it to wherever you want.
And you can go and pick it up with the intent of using it to cover the mukta.
That's what we're saying. According to Rabbi Yitzchok, you cannot. According to Rabbi Yitzchok, you cannot. But
you have to have it in your hand.
But because you're not allowed to move one keli You're not allowed to move a keli that is mutter to use for the sake of something else, which is aser, which is mukta. And here, if your only reason in picking up that plate is to cover the egg, then according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you're not allowed to do that. But if you're picking it up for some other reason, or if you already have it in your hand, that's what the Braisa would be talking about. Now, then the Braisa continues, Usfeika Asura, a suffix with the egg is Asur, which at this point, the Gemara figures, a suffix means we're not sure whether it was laid on Yom Tov or whether it was laid on a weekday. The Imnis Araba Elef, and if the egg was mixed up with 1,000 others, Kulan Asuris, and all of them are Asur on Yom Tov.
Means
a suffix. Well, at this point, we're assuming that suffix means we're not sure whether it was laid on a weekday or on Yom Tov. Yeah. Now, we have to consider then this last part that was this. We're not worried about the part that said that it's mukta. Fine, the egg is mukta, we have no problem with that. We're worried about this. The Gemara is concerned now about this last part of the Braisa that's saying that if it's that the suffix is aser and that if it was mixed up with others that stays aser. So Bishlema L'Rabba Da'ama Mishum Achana, we can understand according to Rabba, who says that the reason why the egg is aser on Yom Tov is because of a matter of Daraisa, because Achana D'Rabba is a din Daraisa. In the case when Yom Tov comes out right after Shabbos, or Shabbos comes out right after Yom Tov. In the other cases, it's true. Rabba himself agrees only to Rabbanim. So then, have a Sfeika D'Oraisa. Well, then fine. If you have a suffix, whether the egg was laid on Yom Tov or on a weekday, then fine. It's a suffix in something D'Oraisa. B'chol Sfeika D'Oraisa L'chomra. And we know a general rule that anytime you have a suffix in something D'Oraisa, you have to be Machmir. So fine, we can understand according to him why even a suffix would be also. Ella, Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Yitzchok, the Amim Mishum Gzeira, but according to Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yitzchok, who both say that it's an extension of a Gzeira, that we say that either that's related, either that it's a part of a Gzeira against fruit that fell off the tree, or it's a part of the Gzeira of juice that oozed out of fruit. Well, then if it's a Suffolk, whether it was laid on Yom Tov or on weekday, it's a Suffolk in something Dirabanan, V'chol Sveika Dirabanan L'Kula, and we have a general rule that whenever we have a Suffolk in something Dirabanan, we always go L'Kula. So why would it be Asur? So he answers him, Sefer Asar Safek Trefa. The last part of the Braisa actually is switching gears. It's not talking about a Safek, whether it was laid on Yom Tov or not. It's a different case of a Safek involving an egg. Namely, you're not sure. The reason why it's putting it together in the Braisa is just because it's all talking about eggs. Namely, you're not sure whether this egg came from a Trefa, whether this egg came from a Trefa chicken. The din is, if a chicken becomes a Trefa, then any eggs that it lays after that are also aser. Now, a chicken that became a trefa is not capable afterwards of becoming pregnant, or whatever the equivalent is for chickens, and growing new eggs inside it. So actually, one of the ways that you know if you have a suffix on a chicken, whether it became trefa or not, one way to tell is if it's capable of developing a new batch of eggs inside it, and it actually lays them, then you know it's not trefa. Because otherwise it wouldn't have the ability to do that. But it could have been, you know, like you said yesterday, a chicken normally lays eggs every day or almost every day. So, that wasn't you. I think that was Yaakov, actually. I don't remember. Anyway, so therefore, practically speaking, when a chicken when a chicken becomes trefa, let's say it was attacked by a wild animal or something, many times there'll be eggs already in stages of development in it. But when it lays those eggs, because they came from it, they're considered like a part of the chicken. So they're also because they're trefa.
But don't we say that the egg itself, blood inside, or
if there's blood inside, that's not an issue because you can candle the egg, find whether it has blood, and besides that, fine, you'll open it, you'll find the blood, and you'll, you know, in some cases, technically, anyway, if there's blood in an egg, in some cases, you're actually allowed to just throw out the blood spot and eat the rest of the egg. Lamaisa, we don't usually do that, but, you know, in principle, not necessarily is the egg always ulcer. Actually, though, that the player, sure, does ask the question why Rashi says that the suffix we're talking about over here is a suffix whether this egg came from a trefa chicken. Why don't we say that it's a suffix whether the chicken itself is trefa? You have a case, for example, where you're not sure if the chicken itself was attacked. And the answer is, he says, because in that case, then you ultimately will be able to figure out the answer. Again, wait a few weeks. Wait until the egg starts developing a new batch of, until the chicken starts developing a new batch of eggs and lays them. Then you know retroactively it wasn't today, and you don't have an issue. The kind of suffix that you'll never be able to know is whether this egg came from this chicken or from that chicken.
How do you then by working through a new bunch of eggs?
Yes.
And then?
And then if it's able to lay them, then you know it's not a chafer.
Cannot lay them, it would be safe.
Yeah. No, not the fact that no, the inability to lay eggs is not what makes it chafer, but the ability to lay eggs proves that it's not chafer. No, that's what I'm saying. Because you can have it takes 3 weeks for a chicken. It takes 21 days for an egg to develop inside a chicken. So you can have, let's say, an egg started developing inside a chicken. Let's say Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Beis Nissan, the chicken was attacked by a wild animal or something. That egg will still finish developing inside the chicken, and on Chof Aleph, on Shavuot Shel Pesach, it'll be laid. But that egg is safe because it came from a chafer chicken. Only if 21 days after the attack, so on Isru Chag, on Chof Gimel Nissen, the chicken starts developing a fresh batch of eggs, and then 21 days later, all of those are laid, or not even all of them, but the first of those or whatever, then you know that it's kosher, that it was never attacked. Or that the attack didn't harm it, or whatever.
Is that original egg was good?
No, it retroactively, yeah, it's still around. Sure.
That refers to like a whole body, or just like the inner.
No, any of the things that can make it a chafer. There's about 70 different conditions that can make a brood a chafer. So that's what we're talking about. I mean, you're a suffix chafer. So then, obviously, that's something d'oraisa, nothing d'rabbanan anymore. So if so, if you're telling me that we're talking about a suffix trefa, then look at the last part. It's out of the elf kulam nasuris. We're saying that if the egg got mixed up with 1,000 others, then all of them are usur. Now, yamet b'shleima suffix yomtov suffix choil. If you're saying that the suffix in the braisa is suffix whether the egg was laid on a weekday or on Shabbos, well, fine. I can understand why it's usur no matter how many it got mixed in. Why we don't say bitul b'roiv? Because havidavash yeshleima turin. Because it's the thing that's capable of becoming mutter later. Because after all you have to do is wait till after Yom Tov, and then you'll be able to eat all of them. But chol davar sheyesh lematirin, afilu be'elokoi batel. Any davar sheyesh lematirin is not batel, even in 1,000. Rashi says the reason is because, what are you doing? What are you saying? You don't have the patience to wait till it'll become mutter, you have to rely on bitel? Why do that? Wait until it actually becomes mutter outright, and then eat it. Come on, you know, we're talking 1 day, 2 days, whatever. It's the principle of the matter that something that's capable of becoming mutter, instead of you have to rush to eat it right now, and then wait till it becomes mutter. That's what Rashi says. The Ran has a different explanation. In Nedarim, there's a long sugya about Dover Sheyesh Lamaturin. The Ran there explains basically that Dover Sheyesh Lamaturin is not batel because it's similar to min b'mino. It's similar to one thing getting mixed up in a whole bunch of things of the same kind, where not necessarily does it become batel in that case. And Mefarshim talk about why the Rana needs a different reason, that there can be a difference between dry things being mixed together, like fruit or eggs, versus wet things being mixed together, like different liquids or whatever.
Min b'mino?
Min b'mino.
It does not
become batel. Yeah. So, if we say that we're talking about suffix of Yom Tov or weekday, then fine. The reason why it's also, even if it's mixed up with 1,000, is because it's a davar sheyesh lamaturin. Eli, I'm a suffix trefa. But if you're saying that the egg is a suffix, whether it came from a trefa bird or not, davar sheyesh lamaturin, even tibotu b'roba. So it's not, there's no heter for it, because you're never going to find out which chicken it came from. So therefore, it should just be botel b'roiv. V'chitema, and you might answer back, you know, why it's not botel b'roiv for a different reason. Beis ha'chashuva v'loi botla. An egg is an important thing. It can't be botel. Something that's kosher cannot be bottled. We're going to talk about that in a second. Now, there is a different point. You know, in Hilchos Taharuvos in Shulchan Aruch, there's a number of cases where it mentions that something can't be bottled. One of them is a davar kosher. For example, there's a whole siman over there about in your day in Hilchos Taharuvos about chaticha ro'uli scabbard, a piece of meat that you learn it when you learn for smicha. Chaticha ro'uli scabbard, a piece of meat that's like important enough to serve to a guest, like a piece of steak or something. You have another kind of thing which is kosher, which the Gemara is going to talk about over here, is things that are sold by number. And then, for example, eggs are usually sold by the dozen. And then you have, and another kind of davar kosher is called a beria. It's called something like something as it grew naturally, like one whole ant, for example. So actually, so the Shach discusses over there in Hilchos Tarubis, why doesn't the Gemara ask that the egg is a beria and it shouldn't be bottle on that basis? A beria meaning a whole creature.
Yeah.
And the answer is basically that the egg is not a whole creature because it's not alive. A beria would be something that's alive, like a bug or something. No, that has nothing to do with it. Come on.
We don't draw the allusion to embryo in that.
So if an embryo starts growing in it, then the Shach talks about maybe then it would be considered a barrier, yeah. But we're talking about an egg that was freshly laid, so yeah. Anyway, so you're going to say that an egg is considered something important. So, that would work well according to the opinion that in a Mishnah in Orla that discusses this concept of Dava Kosher not being Batal, that the Mishnah, the two different versions that the Amoraim had of what the Mishnah says, one version, we'll say in a minute, it's the Machlokes, Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish, is that the proper wording in the Mishnah is Kol Shadauka Limonis, anything which normally is sold by number. So eggs usually are sold by number. Usually you buy eggs by the dozen or whatever. So then, fine, then we could say that an egg is considered a double chasher. But according to the opinion, that proper wording in the Mishnah is anything which is always sold, the standard way to sell it is by number, meaning it's never sold by anything other than number. Then what are you going to say? Because eggs, usually eggs are sold by count, but not always. Sometimes eggs are just sold, you know, yeah, here's a pile of eggs, you know. Not one by one. There's a difference between, for example, when you buy eggs, for example, you usually buy a dozen. But for example, when you buy, a bag of rugelach or something, you know, there's not necessarily a fixed number in the bag. Sometimes it's a little, yeah, that's what we're saying. It goes by weight. So the same thing with eggs. Sometimes eggs are just sold by bulk. Without a specific number.
So far we said
if you don't have the number,
yeah.
You can break.
They need something
Now
we think fixed numbers.
Right, so that's what we're saying. In other words, do you sell them by number? You know, I'm always, you know, you're always buying. It doesn't have to be a certain number, but you're always, you know, you always. It doesn't have to be a certain fixed number. It can be sometimes 12, sometimes 14, but whatever. There's always, you know, there's always a number that's quoted. Or it can be, for example, eggs. Usually you do, but not always. Sometimes you just buy eggs in bulk. So then, what are you going to say? Then an egg is not considered a double kosher. What is this Mishnah we're talking about? It's not. We learned in a Mishnah in Orla. Misha hayolo chavila tilton shokalaya kerem. If a person has bundles of tilton, which is in English it's called fenugreek, it's kind of spice. They use it to make childa. Shokalaya kerem, which is kalaya kerem, it's a plant that was grown in a vineyard, which is also minakara. Yidoku, then you have to burn them. Nisaru v'acheres, if the bundles of tilton get mixed up with other ones, with wurmutter, v'acheres, and those other ones got mixed up with other ones, Tosfos has a bit of a discussion over here, are we actually going to that last part? Anyway, kulam yidoku, then all of them have to be burnt, divir meir, that's what a meir says, v'chamam yalo v'echad masayim, the chamam say no, as long as you have 200 bundles that are mutter, and the one against the one that's usher, then you're allowed, then it can be bottled. Orally, you need, unlike most Isurim, you need 60 times as much to be bottled. Certain Isurim, you need more. Truma, you need 100.
Mm-hmm.
And Orla and Talaya Kerem, you need 200. The Gemara, I think, loans it out from Sukkim. Shahoyer of Meir, because Rav Meir used to say, Es Shadauka Limnos Mekadesh, anything that's counted is Mekadesh, so therefore bundles like that, usually you buy them by number. You don't just buy, you know, a pound, or you don't just buy a pound of bundles. You actually count out the number. So therefore it's a Dava Choshev. Whereas the Chacham say, Eina Mekadesh, Ela Shisha Dvarim Bilvav. There's only six items that are Mekadesh, meaning that make it off limits, that it has to be burnt. Only six kinds of foods. That we're in other words that you can never be mevakel them even in 200. They're considered a double chasher. The Chum said there's only six such things. Rav Akiva, I'm a shiver. Rav Akiva says there's seven. He agrees with the six of the Chum, and he adds one more. The Elohein, egoze perech, nuts of perech. Rashi says perech is the name of a place. Other Mepharshim, the Rav on the Bar Tanura on the Mishnah says that perech means that they're soft shelled nuts. They're nuts with shells that are soft enough to break open by hand. Perech, like avod is perech.
Is that Rav Soloveitchik?
No, the Bar Tanura.
Oh, Bar Tanura.
Yeah, the Bar Tanura. I said the Rav first because that's what many people call him. The,
oh,
the Rav. Rav Avadi Bar Shmuel. It could be something like peanuts, I guess. Peanuts themselves are native to America, so it's not those, but it's something along those lines. Yeah. Okay. Goes the perach, v'rimone bodon, and pomegranates of bodon. Bodon is also the name of a place. These are particularly big, fancy looking pomegranates. Yeah. The chaviyat stumus and sealed barrels of wine, because as long as they're sealed, they still have their importance. Once they're opened up, they lose that. The chilfei trodin and a certain kind of beets. Chilfei actually literally means leaves, but that's things the Mepharshim talk about, that it means like a certain kind of beets that have like prickly things on them. Whatever, it's a very, very high quality of beet. We mentioned trodin before, yeah. Yeah. The kilchei kruv and stalks of cabbage. Rashi quotes from a Gemara at the end of Ksubas that describes how the fruit used to be in Eretz Yisrael in the olden days, where cabbages grew as big as small trees, or cabbages as big as trees. So you're talking big, gesunter-sized cabbages. So therefore, they had an importance. Or dwarf yavonis and Greek pumpkins, which are a very large kind of pumpkin. Rav Akiva Moisef Akikah Shabbat Abayis. Rav Akiva adds one more. Also, loaves of bread that private people bake, as opposed to the kind that come from the bakery, which are just standard. Well, not just we mean big ones, but yeah. Haroi la orla, of this list of six or seven things, whichever one orla is appropriate to, then orla applies. For example, chaviyat sumas are made out of grapes. The wine is made out of grapes, so the concept of orla is relevant to them. But kalaya kerem is not. Obviously, you can grow grapes in a vineyard. Haroi la kalaya kerem, from this list of six or seven things, whichever one are appropriate to kalaya kerem, like the pumpkins and the bread and so forth, and then we apply then kalaya kerem. The Itmar Allah, and they said on this that there's machloikas of what the exact wording of what Rameir says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Eshe Dafka Limanas Shinin. Rabbi Yochanan says that the wording, that what Rameir says is anything which is always counted. Rabbi Shimon Lakish Amar Kol Shad Dafka Limanas Shinin. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish, Rabbi Lakish said anything which usually is counted. So then, so Hanichal Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. So the Braisa that we said before, if we're saying that the egg is also because it's mixed up, even when it's mixed up with 1,000 others, so according to Rabbi Lakish, fine. Eggs are usually sold by number. So therefore, it's considered. So therefore, we could say that braisa is going according to the mayor. The mayor would say that the egg, when it's mixed up with 1,000, is also. Whereas the chachamim would say no, an egg is not in this list of six or seven things. So therefore, you can be mevachal it. El Rabbi Yochanan, ma'ikel mema. What are you going to say according to Rabbi Yochanan? Even Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah, even Rabbi Meir does not say that eggs can't become bottle. So who would that earlier braisa be like? Amar Abba. So I think we'll learn two more lines, I guess, and then we'll continue the discussion tomorrow. Amara Papa, Hai Tana the Litzrik Tziesu. The Tana of that Braisa is the Tana who said a different Mishnah about a case of Litzrik Tziesu, about a case in a Mishnah in Truma about a litra, which is a certain size measurement of dried figs. To Omar, and that Tana says, we'll learn the Mishnah tomorrow, but he says, Kol Davar Shemimini, Nafil B'Drabban Alaybalta, V'Chol Shekin B'Daisa. Anything that's counted, even if it's not always counted, and even if it's not in the Chachamim's list of six or seven things, is not Batal, even B'Drabban, and certainly not D'Araisa. So he would be the one who says that the egg, therefore, is that the egg is not Batal. In other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, neither the Meir nor the Chachamim would say that. But there's another Tana who says that it would. And what that Mishnah is, we'll leave for tomorrow.